Okay, Shabbat Shalom. So we have got the great mystery revealed, and we are in part five, so we're getting close. And this one I've titled today, A Message from the Throne. Who here believes we have a king? Who here believes that he's revealed through his word? Who here believes that when he says, and my favorite scripture, it is the honor of Elohim to conceal a matter, and it is, the glory of Elohim to conceal matter, and the honor of kings to search it out. So, this kings and priests and this reflection, I believe, allusion to a bride, you know, does the Father actually conceal things in his word? And the answer is yes, he does. In fact, you know, if you look at this whole concealment, you know, the Brit is concealed in the Tanakh, and the Tanakh is revealed in the Brit Hadashah. When you understand this relationship, he does do it. Why would he do that? Why would the Father do that? Why doesn't he just spell it out? What? Right, so we hunger and thirst for righteousness. So as we go on that journey, what does that mean? So we're sitting here and we're going, okay, but this is a great mystery, the great mystery revealed, even hidden from past generations. So this one's a big one. Now, notice the word revealed, not we're revealing today. This is not being revealed today. It might be to us intellectually for the first time. It may be we're having something confirmed intellectually the first time. It may be that something drops to someone's heart today and we get revelation or heart circumcision on the matter. But the actual mystery itself being known and understood has been very, very understood for the last 2 days or 2,000 years. So this is something now, nothing new under the sun, and we are talking great prophecies and great promises and great hope. And I want today, because Paul's been, you know, going through this whole journey, you know, this whole coming out of Rome, we're going to look at the message of the throne and the secret, of the gospel and do our Q&A today. But he's been laying a framework for healthy spiritual growth. He's been giving hints to a number of things here. Solution to bad authority is not no authority. The solution to bad authority is what? Good authority. So we need to learn what that looks like. What does servant authority look like? Not, Roman control. It's kind of funny. I always think of, it's like the Christian side of the river is like democracy, if you imagine politically. It thinks everything is democracy, and it's like the Judeo or Hebrew root side of the river is communism. You know, it's like it's doing this. But is everybody aware we're not called into communism or democracy? He's calling us into the house of Israel, which is a theocracy. Now, none of us have grown up understanding that. We weren't raised in that environment, so we're actually slowly learning what is it like to actually live in a kingdom, a household, to have a king seated. What does that mean? And then how are we going to actually learn this? Because we're in these fallen states coming from our various environments, and somebody's going, oh, by the way, you need to start understanding a theocracy. Well, you've had no example of that in your life. I've had no example of that. So we've got to start to understand this. And he's going to reshape us, right? He's going to renew our minds. He's going to take us through this journey. And so that takes a while. Everybody is starting, you know, and struggling to understand really what this is. But he's not called us to the political spectrum. We're actually heading for a kingdom. And so, you know, what does it look like when you have a king seated on a throne? And how is a kingdom administered? And so this is what Paul was trying to touch on and why he was trying to do this, because he's trying to reflect this dispersion that's going to happen, and what we've seen in a Levitical priesthood and what came through and then came through Judaism and whatnot, we're actually going into this dispersed environment. There's actually the temple's going to be torn down. He's saying you're now the temple, and yet his ways are still going to be preserved. And this comes in now to truly understanding the order of Melchizedek and not a lot of the poor teachings that are out there, which are actually throwing away something. In fact, the fivefold is preserving something, but it's doing it from a scattered position. And so there is teachings that are harming people because they're saying, well, this is no longer, this is, and it's like, no. You're actually creating division in the word, and you're not understanding what the role of this was. Now, the fact that the playing field was changed because of a dispersion, now that's something to know, but his ways change not. And we've got to be careful with this, because there's lots of strange teaching out there on the order of Melchizedek. And all this means is the voice of the righteous king. Always remember this. And the question is, will we be the voice of the righteous king? And what establishes his righteousness? His Torah. And so when we start to divide this up in order to suit our whatever modern, you know, and get twists on things, we're going to get in trouble. So the order of Melchizedek has a very special role to play because the playing field has changed. That doesn't mean we throw away things. And so, but there are teachings out there that are doing it. There's very good teachings, very bad teachings out there, but they're all circulating around the internet. You know, what we want to do in here is not sit there and try and argue every little thing that we think or hear or see, but as a journey, as a fellowship, we want to go, okay, what does it mean to be the voice of the righteous king? Because it doesn't mean throwing away the Torah. So, we gotta get this. And it doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge the blood of Messiah. And I hear people going on about, you know, well, you know, I'm Torah observant. Really? You know, I know one who was Torah observant, because the scriptures tell us that one was the sinless lamb. We only have record of one Torah observant being that has ever walked the face of the earth. Do we need the blood of Messiah? So we've got all these arguments. Think about this. Everybody falls short, and we've got people going, no, I'm Torah observant. I do this, I do that, I see it this way. No, I'm Torah observant, I see it this way. I'm going, do you see the folly of this? You brood of vipers, you hypocrites. You claim to be honoring Torah? Now, to try and honor and to walk in that, and then to understand his way, his truth, and his life, that's fine. That's the pursuit. That's the noble pursuit. And his blood will cover us as he continues to grow, mature us, and bring us into understanding. But I see so much division going on from people who are not even honoring Torah that are using some matter to create division. And I'm going, excuse me? Where did your righteousness come from? I thought the righteousness that covers me is the blood of Messiah. Like, do you see how dangerous this can get? And we're seeing this happen in the body of Messiah, and it's hurting it, and it's killing it. We have a king who's not going to appreciate this. There's no wonder he says, well, I find the faith when I get back, because what truly is representing the faith? Understanding biblical authority. So this whole thing comes in and is directly linked to understanding theocracy and the current playing field and how that's being administered. And Paul was trying to reflect what our king is doing from the throne. Messiah gives according to the measure. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he give the same responsibility to somebody just coming into the faith as opposed to somebody who's been walking the faith for many years? Like, why not? Yeah. Have you persevered? Can I really see what the fruit of the Ruach is? Did you pay a price in order to hear the actual truth? Did you repent while you were paying? Do you see there's all of these things going on? And it's like, well, you know, what does democracy do? Yeah. You say, oh, okay, I got something to say. Well, okay, that's fine. But understand, this is actually about helping people to grow. And that doesn't just include what we think is knowledge, or it's the whole gamut. And so to walk in that place, you know, there are good, some parents are good parents, others are poor parents. Right? What we want to be at every level is we want to learn, what does this actually look like? This responsibilities that we have. Because he's not leading us into bondage. But he's not leading us into chaos. And chaos ultimately leads to the ultimate bondage. Because basically, you need the actual hammer to come down just to keep control of things. So we don't want to go into that position. This is really annoying me. Hold on. Okay. And then, of course, the raising of the house of Israel. And the great shadow picture is what? We're here. We're right here. So what's the shadow picture of all these things? Our more intimate environments. You see, if we know how to run a marriage covenant and then have a family from it and then be able to work in the more intimate environment, that is going to spread out. The more that we understand how this actually works here, the better reflection that will be. So when this is not healthy, you'll probably see families in disarray behind it. It's a sure reflection, if you can imagine. So whatever noise and trouble you're seeing here, you're probably going to see actual family nucleuses that are in trouble. Marriage, the behavior of the children, everything. These are not the people, okay, that can yet be entrusted with the measure of Messiah. Doesn't mean they won't be. Doesn't mean they're worth less or anything else. All these silly places we go in our minds. Just understand a responsible father is going to be saying, sorry, have you walked the walk? Do you actually care? Is your heart matter? Do you actually care about this person? Or do you just want to smash him with your knowledge? You know, or whatever it might be. Do we actually operate in love? And what does that look like in all its dimensions? So this is a very vast thing to be grappling with. So the healthier we get this, the healthier that naturally becomes. But that will never be healthy if this is in a mess. Does that make sense? Do you understand? Because it just, we're just simply reflecting something that the inside of the tree, or in this case I got the bullseye up, hitting the mark, is not healthy. So this is where he goes on about this and really understanding. These are servant leadership positions. Notice that's not a pyramid. Who's the master? Yeshua. But the measure in here is different. And we need to really understand this. There's a reason why the kids don't tell the parents how the house runs. That doesn't mean that child may not one day be telling their kids how the house runs. So if there's no healthy example and all this stuff, and so this is this whole setting, in particular in today's world, it goes crazy. And then we touched on these five crowns, these five parts, and how they, I believe, really link in to the ways that, you know, that Messiah administers to his kahal in these various functions to help grow and build up for the equipping of, yeah, the kahal, the body. Now, is that a vast thing to understand and to live and to work through, and especially when we come from all these westernized type of environments? Yes. But we don't walk away from what it's saying because I don't actually understand it. It's important for us to understand a theocracy. Do you think anybody in this fellowship understands a theocracy? See, we got to be very careful about this. Do you really know what it's like to live and be administered by a king? You're pretty brave if you think you do. But we have everyone commenting on these things, don't we? Instead of us maybe humbling ourselves and just going, you know what? Even as the teacher, I don't know what it's like to physically live in the flesh under a theocracy. I am learning in the spirit what is coming. Do you see what I mean? There's a difference. And for me to pretend, oh yeah, you know, I've got this whole, you know, living under a theocracy thing sorted out. I didn't grow up, wasn't raised with that kind of thinking. And so we just need to sometimes be honest and reflect this and revisit this in our lives, because if not, we will think we are speaking into things, against things, even for things, from a very foolish and ignorant thing. You know, Paul would say, you know, you foolish Galatians, who bewitched you? This is from in the believing camp. Who's bewitched us? What's going on? It's always constantly there wanting to do this to us. And so this is where he's saying, come on, we've got to learn how to operate and work together, because if we grow up, the more we do, the more we spiritually mature, the fullness of Messiah, the more he can actually impart with us. But there's going to be a hallmarker here, this fruit of the Spirit. And do we have a modern Western New Age definition of these? Yes or no? Everybody honestly in this room. Do you have an ancient Hebrew understanding of this when you read it in the English or Greek? No. So, but you just read it, don't we? We just read it. We go, okay, yeah, I got it. I know what that means. So you know what meekness and temperance means to who? To you. Do you see the danger in this? Because if this fruit of the Spirit, the Ruach, is marking, hallmarking what you're looking for to understand that somebody is growing to the fullness of Messiah, because I'll suggest to you that the fruit of the Ruach is reflecting Messiah in someone else. So if I could twist your understanding of all of these things or make it about your definition of them in the battleground of your mind, is it possible you won't even know what you're looking at in the end? But you'll 100% will believe it, won't you? Do you see how that works? That's called deception. This is what the adversary does. And so what we're doing is we're working to go, I really want, there was a time in my life where I'm going, Father, these people betrayed me, did things so hideous, I won't utter them in a teaching. Well, in a testimony at some point, but not in a teaching. And yet, they were exuding the so-called fruit of the Spirit as defined by a modern standard. And the wickedness that was happening behind the scenes was staggering. And if they'd been on the throne, the true throne, I'd be dead today. I'd actually be dead if they had the power of Elohim in their hands at this point. Certainly before it all came out, the truth came out in the wash. And it did eventually. You watch people scatter then. You know, they run. They run from that truth because it's shining on their own lives. It's shining on all of our lives. And the question is, are we going to persevere through this? Are we going to do it? One of the questions I had at that time when I was seeing so-called these behaviors, what the Father was doing was, Curtis, you don't actually know what the fruit of the Spirit is. You don't actually know. What do you mean I don't know? How many times have I read this? Of course I know. I could quote you Galatians in 5. What are you talking about? You don't know. And I'm like, this is a very, you know, and by the way, I'm in a crushed place and I'm hurting. And I've got the Father going, no, you need the correction and reproof. That's a funny way to comfort somebody, isn't it? You know, it seems almost counterintuitive, but it actually did bring comfort because I started to actually understand these things a lot more. Operate in the fullness of my love. Appreciative of that fact occurring, the shalom or the non-anxious reality that you will live as a result, a persevering person, not flaky, not gone, actually perseveres. Perseveres for all of this, has moral integrity. Uprightness, righteous action. Where are you going to get the understanding of righteous action from? You be honest with this. Did goodness, was it defined by the Torah in your life before today? How did I even know to recognize this was pointing to the Torah? Wow. Do you see the deception that's going on? I'm not even looking for that in these people. I've got this New Age modern definition going on, and I'm going, no. Or, yeah, in my case, in this instance, The fact that I thought I was seeing it led to deception and led to hurt and destruction by these individuals because they could masquerade as angels of light. And people got hurt. Faith, a conviction of his truth, not trying to justify or, you know, create dissension. Actually, somebody who reveres, actually, I'm not here to win an argument. I actually want to know the truth. Do you actually see this in these people? Or do you see, no, I win. Like, what is going on? This is very serious, this one. People say, oh, I'm a lover of truth. I'll bash everybody to death along the way. Or, no, I actually revere this. And when we come together, kind spirit, an actual kind spirit. When you know this person, are they a kind spirit? What does that mean? This kindness, what am I actually seeing? Do kindness equals politeness? As long as you're always polite, you must be kind. I can tell you, the wickedness I saw came from a very polite person. Politeness didn't help me understand the fruit of the Spirit at all in this individual. But if I'd started to understand, are you kind? Am I looking at the actions? Do I'm walking close enough to see whether you really have another person's interest at heart? Do you understand? Actually have that other person's interest at heart. Whatever's required. Here's another one. Not ruled by passions and desires. This doesn't mean you can't have passions and desires. Of course you're going to have them. The issue is being ruled by them. Big difference. Will you choose your passion and desires over what Yah calls you to do? Do you see the difference now? Would you really? You know, oh, my brother needs me, but you know, the ice hockey game's on. Okay, I'm there for you, brother. I'll be there in an hour. See, who sees that in that moment? Or whatever that is, that desire, like, we, the Father enjoys you enjoying things in your life, just not when you'll choose it over Him. Because the moment you choose your passion and desires over Him, what does it become? Idolatry. Will you really give that up for me right now? Because I need you to do this. See, this is a very different thing. So you start to read it in this context, and he was redefining or showing me what I was actually looking for and understanding that. Okay. And again, the challenge and the reason why I raise this is I say now this, the fruit of the Ruach as a spouse. Think about that. Are we seeing that in each other's spouses? Like, that's a challenge, isn't it? You know? Pip's never not seen it, so she doesn't know how to relate right now. No, I'm just kidding. How about as a parent? Right? Like, are the children seeing this? You know, are they seeing angry parents all the time? Are they seeing anxious parents? You're like, what are they seeing? What are they living? Fellowship with each other. How about with each other? You know, this is going to start to indicate to us something, the fullness of Messiah. What about our natural families, right? What does my unbelieving father see in me? He might not be able to articulate it as the fruit of the Spirit and all that sort of a thing, but if he was challenged, when you look at your son, Doug, do you see these things? That's an interesting thermometer, isn't it? Because there's no dog in the race in that one, is it, with natural unbelieving family? They're not trying to get some agenda or message or understanding across. They simply see it or they don't. Why don't you all go and do that? Find somebody in your family who knows you, who's as biased as they can possibly be because they probably saw you grow up or whatever, right? They've got the goods on you. Go to them. And ask them, I'm going to read you a list. Do you see any of these things in me? That's sobering. Are you really game for this exercise? to actually take the fruit of the Ruach and lay it before your unbelieving family and go, I'm going to read something. And do you see any of this in me? Because whether they know it or not, they're going to be seeing some of the character of Messiah. See, they're not, they wouldn't even know why you're asking. Do you see what I mean? That's an interesting litmus test, isn't it? How about your workplaces? By the way, you know, this is not a guilt thing, right? It's supposed to be sobering for us to understand, like, how would I really, right? How about in our sporting interests? Try and do that playing ice hockey over the years. I'm not sure that the people I played ice hockey with or against would have. I read the list and see, do you see that in me? And I'll tell you what I see in you. You're dead next time you're on the ice. Josh used to say that to me. Public interaction. Josh and I met each other playing ice hockey against each other. He's a very good player, actually. He used to drive me nuts. Leadership roles in the body of Messiah. How's that get sobering for any of us? And by the way, your leadership roles in the body of Messiah start as a parent, not just the one yabbering up here. But boy, is that sobering. Like, have I grown to the fullness of Messiah? I think not, if we're going to be honest. Not at this point. So, it's like this whole thing becomes the brazen altar. Do you understand what I'm meaning? When you walk up and you see the reflection of yourself, and do I see Messiah? Well, I could maybe be deluded and go, yes, I see Messiah according to my image. Right? But the brazen altar reflects the whole gamut. Do you see the point I'm trying to make? Okay? So not to be guilty about this, but to actually go, we got to be honest on this journey. If not, we might start bringing ourselves righteousness into the equation and therefore hurt each other eventually. When we are alone, the ultimate litmus test. That one is very sobering because your appointment in front of Yeshua includes that. Everybody looks down on that one. Not me. Not me. I look really good. Really? You see, do we need the blood of Messiah? Let's be honest. Do we really need the blood of Messiah? This is going to start to really get us to understand just what has truly been done. Because he's about to talk about something that if you can get the message today, it is one of the most glorious, most incomprehensible, most incredible, most only a Elohim could come up with this. And to do it at this level. But I'll tell you, it's so incredible that our little vain imaginations couldn't even have come up with this one. It couldn't have come up with it, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to challenge you. I believe you truly have been invited to a wedding your whole life. And you, I'm sitting here pleading with you. Believe it. It's actually true. If we believe the word for what it says, even at the parashat level, never mind the sod level. Believe it. You've been invited to a wedding. If we actually truly got this in our spirit, I mean, I look at couples, you know, they're planning their weddings and, you know, they're getting their things together and they write their, you know, the invites and we plan the day and everything. And you see all the effort that goes into that in the flesh. Yet I come with a message going, no, actually, we're supposed to be preparing for a wedding. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's a neat concept, Curtis. Anyway, I got this wedding I got to plan. Picking fruit from the shadow picture and thinking it will sustain us instead of learning that it was always pointing us to the actual tree of life. But we've got Christians actually turned away from the tree. Therefore, seeing whatever it is that they've had to imagine their Messiah to be. And I've got Hebrew root messianic people looking at the shadow pictures trying to grab this fruit. How ridiculous would it be if you truly saw somebody in an orchard trying to pick fruit from the shadow of the tree that had the apples above it? Repent, turn to the actual tree. It didn't mean the shadow has been done away with. In fact, it told you what was there. What did it tell you was there? A tree that might give you sustenance? How silly would you think it'd be going, you know, I've been picking all day and I just can't get anything. It's a pretty offensive message. Hey, I've tried picking fruit from shadows at times in my journey, on this journey. I have. More than once. And guess what? I'll probably do it again. But we got to watch this. We really do need spirit and truth to get us to the tree of life. We want to get this, and we don't want to be throwing away or justifying or making things up. I believe the next stage is going to require it, because what you're about to hear today is an invite which you will ultimately reject in the test of your life, or you won't. Do you understand? What he has said is you're not going to be ignorant of this. To you. You're no longer going to be able to claim ignorance after today. And if this hits your heart, I know for some of you it will only still be in the mind, and fair enough, that may be where you're at after today. He's a righteous judge in all this. But if it gets to your heart, you're actually going to start to live your life as if it's true. And what if you lived your life as if you've been invited to the most incredible thing that could ever be? And you started to live your life that way. Do you know Paul saying, we'll talk about this next week, you're going to attract the interest of the throne, and there's going to be a special thing that you got to be understanding of, because who uses, what does Yah use to winnow and sift his kahal, his people? The adversary. Hasatan. So we want to take this serious, right? Because if we walk in his ways, are we in a safe place or unsafe place? And we're going to talk about this next week. We don't have to be scared of the adversary, but we should be respectful of the way the Father does things. Very sobering. Okay. So, he's been setting the scene for the first five chapters, revealing his desire, this two houses becoming one, hinting at an overall secret in all of this as he references this. Time to leave the old man behind and come into the house of Israel. He gives us the reminder of the fruit of the Spirit. There's a call to action to wake up both in the flesh. And by the way, we're going to look at something today. I believe there's a hint to the actual fulfillment of Yom Terah, or what you would call the Feast of Trumpets. A great shadow picture of a marriage covenant, which we all understand in here, although it's being destroyed these days. The shadow picture of Adam and Eve, you know, and then all leading to the revelation of Messiah, Yeshua. Who's got chapter 5? Let's read this together. Is everyone following so far? Okay, let's read this. Become then imitators of Elohim as beloved children. Well, how are you going to do that without the Torah? Think about that one. We've got 1,000 people who all believe in God in the room. None of them are interested in Torah. Now you just read that. Become then imitators of Elohim as beloved children. Get your head around that. Do you understand how stupid that statement is if you don't have the foundation to your faith? Can anybody conceive that? What have you just said to 1,000 people if you just remove the front of the book? They all have to do what now? Make it up. Whoa. How comfortable are you with that? See, it's actually a silly statement to even be making. Never mind the fact the very book we're reading from didn't even exist to the people he was writing to at the time. And walk in love. Not our definition of love, 2,000 years later, new age contaminated weirdness. His definition of love. As Messiah also has loved us and gave himself for us, a gift, an offering to him for a sweet smelling fragrance. Wow, who's going to become a living sacrifice now as a part of all of this? It's funny, yeah. And Paul talks about this in some of the other parts of the Brit Hadashah. A living sacrifice. What does a living sacrifice look like? Well, he's trying to say that it's going to ultimately, in the end, it's going to start to reflect the fruit of the Spirit. So no wonder Hasatan would go after changing that, how that one looks. Or at least getting you to define it in your own minds, and then, of course, you can remain Elohim of your life. But whoring and all uncleanness, greed of gain, let it not even be named among you, as is proper among set-apart ones. Whoa. Set-apart ones. Would set-apart people be seeking to at least try to honor his way? But we've just thrown the front of the book out. Now who's defining what set-apart looks like? Some of you are thinking, man, this is just so obvious and simple. Some of you are right now, aren't you? How obvious and simple is this read right now? But tell me, how did you walk most of your life redefining all the stuff we've been talking about so far? How'd that happen? Because a lot of you are pretty clever people in here. You're not stupid, so we can't take stupidity as the reason. I know most of the people in this room have good intent, so good intent is not the reason. What's the reason? And how do we get ignorance when it comes to spiritual matters? He will deceive us. We'd be wise to know that that actually is meaning us, not the person sitting beside you. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather thanksgiving. Okay, so this state that we're in. Now, this is interesting. For this you know, that no one whores, nor unclean one, nor greedy of gain, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the reign of Messiah of Elohim. Are these people in or outside the camp? Yeah, when we were called out of Rome, or come out of her, my people, or out of Babylon, do you think he means it? Now, this is interesting. If you understand all of these things in light of Torah, you're going to understand how the Torah plays a big part in all of this. Because it's not just all your personal struggles. You see, when we come out of Rome, or the world as such, this is interesting. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these, the wrath of Elohim comes upon the sons of disobedient. Disobedient to your standard of truth, or disobedient to... Yeah. This is actually directly referencing Torah. Therefore, do not become partakers with them. Do not do what they do. For you were once in darkness. Did anybody know you were in darkness when you were walking out there in Rome? Yeah. You were once in darkness, but now you are light. Think about this speaking to the scattered, the lost tribes of Israel that are amongst the nations that they're going out to. You were once in darkness. And he's calling them back to the house of Israel. Now look at this. But now you are light in the Master. Walk as children of light. Would you please start looking again at his ways? That's all. It's not a guilt trip here, but he's saying, understand these ways were what you once knew. This is what, you know, my euphemism for outside the camp, Rome or Babylon, whatever. This is what they did. They did not honor his ways. Okay, but now you're coming in. So we want to start to learn that and understand it. For the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Ruach, defined by either him or you. This is going to be interesting. Is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, Well, what is the only thing defining righteousness and truth? Now, just in case you were still guessing whether he was talking about the Torah. Proving what is well-pleasing to the master. And have no fellowship with the fruitless works of darkness, but rather convict them. Take action. Expose them. Gee, that's interesting. So not only not have anything to do with those who are continually going, no, I can play with this, but it actually says expose it. That doesn't seem very Christian, does it? You know why? Do you know why it doesn't seem very Christian? Because it's not Christianity. Do I have to keep laboring that one? No. For it is a shame to even speak of what is done by them in secret or darkness. He's telling us to come out of something to honor the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because guess what? We all started coming to the house of Israel, and did we have any baggage with us? Do we still have some baggage with us? Is it important to honor these appointed times because it could actually define my behavior? Of course. But all matters being convicted are manifested by light, for whatever is manifested is light. That is why he says, wake up, you who sleep. What's he quoting from there? Isaiah 26:19. This is interesting. If you know what Isaiah 26, we're going to have a look at this. Arise from the dead and Messiah shall shine on you. See then you walk exactly, not as the unwise, but the wise. Walk wisely, redeeming the time, because the days are wicked. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the desire of Yah is. Do you mean actually getting this message from the throne? A message from the throne is actually going to help you in this journey. To have it revealed, to understand it, could actually even motivate you, uplift you, actually encourage you to go through the wicked days. So then, do not be foolish, but understand the desire of Yah. And do not be drunk with wine. Women, put down the booze. Right? Oh, aren't the men still allowed? Okay, everyone put down the booze. In which is loose behavior, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to each other in psalms and songs of praise. Isn't that beautiful? Think of the music today. What are we actually singing and speaking to each other when we're doing the music? It's beautiful. And spiritual songs and singing and striking the strings in your heart to the master. This is where it gets interesting. Giving thanks always for all to Elohim, the Father, in the name of our master, Yeshua Messiah, subjecting yourselves to each other in the fear of Elohim. Now, he gets into something very interesting. Before I read this, we're all going to throw away this narrative. And the narrative wants you to not speak about design. It wants you to speak about equality, doesn't it? It wants you to speak about gender. It wants you to argue whether men and women are more intelligent than male. This is all a modern ruse. There's nowhere in Scripture where gender makes you more or less equal before Elohim. Do not buy into this ruse and do not bring it into this house. The one discussion that we're allowed to have that we're no longer able to have, at least from a modern narrative, is the design discussion. Our world is more beautiful when we celebrate the design of a man and the design of a woman. And when those two become one, apparently it becomes a light. It is in the adversary's best interest to make this some androgynous mess right now. So we can't anchor ourselves into anything. Let's not break the two become one. Let's make the two become what? What's happening right now? No, it's worse. You can't even distinguish between them. Yeah, the same. This is scary. It doesn't say stop being what you're supposed to be in a celibate. It says, come together as one, because together, do I have a better or worse spiritual line of sight if I walk according to the Father's ways with my wife? Will my spiritual line of sight be better or worse? Much better. To walk with the spiritual line of sight of the design of my wife does not hinder me. It actually flourishes my ability to see clearly. For her to walk with my spiritual line of sight in her life, do you think she sees less or more? Imagine bringing those two spiritual line of sights together that are trying to honor the Father's ways. What kind of a picture could you see in the road in front of you in your marriage covenant or nucleus? Do you see how this works? And the adversary is trying to go, no. You need to have his spiritual line of sight. You grab it. So do you see what's happening? No. Don't worry about submitting yours. You go and get theirs. Whoa. Now we're pitted against each other at the most intimate level of the human test. And we're buying it. You like the fruit out there? I don't know about you, right? And I say this, guys. I want a woman. I don't want a world without women. The world is beautiful because of their design. It is functional because of their design. We walk spiritually safer if that design is respected. Women, whether you can conceive this or not, the world is a more beautiful place with men. It is. And you will see better as a result. And if it's honoring his ways, it will be a safer world. Did you know that? Would you feel comfortable if all of a sudden this country just magically had no men in it and the rest of the world found out there was only women here? What do you think's coming? See, we have to often take something to its like extreme place to make a point, don't we? Why? Why do we have to always go to the extreme before we'll actually think about something or get it? Why? I'm actually asking. Because we're good of hearing? Yeah, we're hard of hearing. Right? All of us. This is why we need to learn how to operate as a body, because we're stronger as a body. So as we become one in the shadow picture and understand this, we start to become one with who? Yeshua. This is very, very important. This is not some new age concept where we all mold into a big Yeshua. We all walk around like the stay, you know, the marshmallow man or whatever, Stay Puff Marshmallow Man or Michelin Man or whatever. You know, I'm the big one, Yeshua. This is not what's going on. You're operating in such harmony, such halak with the master that he can entrust you with something very serious. And in the next days, there's something serious coming. Okay. Let's finish this off. Now that we got that out of the way, let's read the elephant in the room, because the elephant in the room here is one of the greatest messages you could ever get if you understand what's about to be said by Paul. Because the husband, okay, right? Wives, subject yourselves to your husbands as to who? Yeshua. Harder or easier if you're seeing Yeshua in that husband? Ladies? It's easier, isn't it? Right? Husbands, take note. Because the husband is head or leader, the word in the Greek, of the wife. As also the Messiah is the head of the assembly and is the Savior of the body. Goodness. Well, surely if you spin that one out of context, wouldn't we back to see? Women aren't as equal as men. Do you know that scripture I just read you, which is going to become one of the most powerful insights to understanding the great mystery revealed, is actually used against the word to make it seem like the Bible is suggesting that men and women aren't equal. Did you know that? They use this scripture. Do not buy this garbage. It doesn't say that the husband is worth more to Elohim. Do you understand that? Okay. But as the assembly is subject, or the kahal, or his people are subject to Messiah, theocracy, kingdom, so also let the wives be to their own husbands in every respect. Well, that's not a problem if you've got a husband that's submitting to the master trying to honor Torah, is it, ladies? But you're trying to envision that statement looking at the current state of affairs. And that becomes a little bit harder to think about then, doesn't it? Right? Let's be honest. Ladies, is that true? And so we look at it in our little fallen world and whatever we've lived to date, and we look at that and we go, you know, what would some of the women say right now? Like heck. Right? My husband is the reason why I don't trust and believe the word of Yah. Whoa. My life, my experience, my bad authority, my this, my that, I, anything to justify away, because I'm either reading truth or I'm not right now. We don't get to throw this away, but maybe our examples or life tests, choices, decisions, the struggles of the battleground are mine. Is it just possible that they've not been pure and holy and set apart? Is it possible that my life and my perception might be more the problem than the actual word of Elohim? Do you see? But we love to apply, because we're on the throne of our lives. We love to apply, and then we like to then interpret the word according to whose lens? Elohim Curtis. Elohim whoever. Dangerous. And what we're learning as we go through the crushing, as we go through this purifying process, is less and less, doesn't mean I'm always successful, but less and less, I'm going, Elohim Curtis, just shut up for a sec. I gotta actually understand what this is saying. Husbands, love, cherish your wives as Messiah did and loves the Kahal, his people, and gave himself for it. Yeah, how do you give himself for it? He puts on a fallen state and allows that creation to abuse him to no end for trying to demonstrate love from a sinless position. And then they throw him on a stake and kill him. I suggest, guys, that we have a lot less of a request. He died for us. He didn't have to do this. By the way, husbands, you don't have to either. But what it's saying is, if you want to reflect Messiah, you're going to slowly live a life where the line of sight and the woman that you love and cherish, who you are submitting into, and she's submitting to you, one to another, regardless of your headship role, you're going to start to take on some of the things she's saying. She is not your enemy, guys. Women, your husbands are not the enemy. If we get this biblically, you are looking at your greatest ally in the test you could possibly have. Now, when it gives warnings of not being spiritually equally unyoked, how serious do you take it now? Because this becomes very difficult if you're not spiritually yoked evenly, isn't it? What if one of you thinks that the Torah matters and the other doesn't? Wow. Do you see how difficult of a journey this now becomes? And well, a lot of us inherited that, didn't we? You know, we pay that price. But blessed are those who are getting this together. You're getting a chance. You're also without a lot less excuse. You're not going to claim ignorance on it. At least some people in this room can still claim ignorance for now. Okay. In order. Now think about what this is, okay? Husbands, cherish your wives as Messiah did and loved his kahal, his people, unto himself, and gave himself for it. In order to what? set it apart and cleanse it with the washing of the water by the word. That means all of the word, not just the bits we like, according to our Elohimness. In order to present it to himself, a splendid assembly, people, not having spot or wrinkle or any of this sort, but that it might be set apart, holy, blameless. By the way, if you're committing spiritual adultery, that'll start giving you an understanding of what being set apart actually means. It'll start to give you an understanding what spot or wrinkle is. There's your wrinkle. There's a little bit of Catholicism there. Let's get this out. Don't buy into the trash that's being out there. I've got to be perfect. I've got to be perfect. Oh, I'm not perfect. Okay, well, I'll just judge people while I'm winning the game in my own self-will, and then I'll just be self-righteous, and then I fall apart, and then, okay, I don't have a leg to stand on. I'll just go sit in the corner for the rest of my life. Well, you're out of the game. Understand what this is pointing to. He's not shocked by all your struggles in the flesh, but you literally have the power of the word and the ruach to take you through something and say no to spiritual adultery. And understanding and honoring his Torah will have you come out of her, my people. Do you understand? Just because you're in a fallen state struggling along the way is not your excuse to entertain your denominational wrinkles and spots. No matter what side of the riverbank we're on. Or the river. Look at this. In this way, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. This is interesting. I always hear people say, you know, you got to learn to love yourself more. You ever hear that? I don't really understand that, because I see a world that is plunged into selfishness and narcissism at such a level, it is staggering. Selfie, selfie, this, this, that, that, my importance, Me Too movements, everything, it's just exploding. And I've got somebody going, what? The solution to this is we just need to love ourselves. No, I think the solution to this is we need to repent. And actually go, we love ourselves. Now, is it possible that we can go through times where we've done something or we're experiencing guilt and condemnation where we don't like ourselves, where we're not proud of ourselves? Yes. That's real. We can experience even depression and hurt and all these sorts of things. But don't mistake that, because that will still be probably in self-pity, which exists on the whole link of people experiencing clinical depression. These are massive journeys of self. They're so focused on self, they can't get out of that. Do you see the difference? One of the greatest ways that you can turn around depression is focus on Yeshua and serving others. Not popping pills to numb yourself. If we just can step outside ourselves, we can overcome all of these sorts of things, but we don't do it. Why? Because we're being deceived. No one ever hated his own flesh. You either believe that or you don't. But feeds it, cherishes it. And also, the master does the body, his people. So get it. Because we are members of his body, as his flesh and of his bones. Look at this. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother. Men, does that mean your in-laws have a lot of say when you head into the marriage covenant? Interesting. You should see the links. I talk about this all the time, how in-laws are hugely responsible for the destruction of modern marriages. Why? Because there is no cleaving and leaving. You've got this situation where it's gone, and a lot of people think, oh, it's always about the daughter with the parents. No, no, no. There is actually some staggering things of where the men have not gone and taken up their headship, allowing all of this stuff to still come into the house. Most in-laws I know do things with good intent. They're not trying to hurt their children's marriages, are they? That's not what they're trying to do. But if we don't have people get the design and the role and the understanding of the marriage covenant, they might let their in-laws or their parents come in to a situation and make it worse because they've not taken their responsibility up before the Father. Do you see what I mean? So it's not about blaming anybody who's maybe gone into situations in this crazy world of ours, maybe even some of the people in this room, and now you should feel guilty because of what the donkey just said. Right? It's about being encouraged and go, you know what? See this for what it is and teach your children, I'm sorry, son. I'm sorry, daughter. You're a big boy now. You're a big girl now. You need to sort this out. You need to go speak to your wife, son. Not my wife needs to speak to you, comfort you, and then sit there and go, yeah, I know. He's really got issues, doesn't he? That is not what that woman may need to hear in that moment. Or it may not be what that man needs to hear when he's got some father-in-law or father going to him, yeah, she's a real bag, isn't she? How's that going to do for a man who needs to take some responsibility and ownership and accountability to the fact that maybe he's not cherishing his wife? Do you see how that works? And so we need to actually start to learn to operate as the house of Israel. This is a journey under a theocracy. Wow. But we have got a helper. We have the Ruach. We're okay. And we've got his word. And we know his ways. It's okay. We all have our past. But today it starts and it can change. Look at this. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great. This secret is great. But I speak concerning Messiah and his people. My goodness, he's directly linked the shadow picture of the husband and wife to Messiah and that which he has purchased. Is it starting to hit you? How many times you hear it? Oh, I know this message. I know Ephesians 5. I know what it's about. It's what that marriage covenant stuff that Curtis always goes on about. Let it really hit you. He's telling you, this is a great secret. I've just revealed it. This whole thing has been about taking a shadow picture and a test of your life and pointing it to, by the way, whose dream, whose goal, whose creation, whose desire, whose family is this? His. Where did we forget this along the way? You've been invited. It's not about you, as in dying, fallen Steve or Curtis or Josh. It's not about us. We've been invited to his dream. And we've been so focused on our, say it, dreams. However, you two, everyone, let each one love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she fears her husband. Look at this. Look at this. So he goes, he just reveals this huge secret, and then he goes, okay. All right. You're back in the shadow picture, so just make sure. And that fear of the husband and everything else is a direct relation to, is it wise right now? The beginning of wisdom is the fear of? How he was able to change gears at that moment, I do not know to that level. But Paul was a far better orator than I am. Thank goodness we had this man who gave his life up to serve the way he did. Because we're about to see something that we couldn't do without this book. Remember I mentioned to you this fulfillment of Yom Terah? Okay, so the first four spring Moedim appointed times have been fulfilled. Fulfilled by who? And who do they all point to? Yeshua. Does that mean all of a sudden they don't matter now? No, we are now doing and honoring them, right? Out of honor. They've gone from being Moedim dress rehearsal to now anniversary and understanding, and indeed I think will play key markers in the times to come. Because Hebrew prophecy is precept upon precept, right? So it's not like we don't worry about the fall Moedim anymore. Do you see what I'm getting at? They will probably play key markers. But the fulfillment of the final four are the fall Moedim. Look at this. He refers to Isaiah 26:19-21, and he's talking about this whole thing that he's leading up to. He's about to reveal to you the great mystery, and he mentions this. Do you think this is a coincidence? Now just think very seriously about this. He could have gone anywhere in the Tanakh. And he's going to take you to a place where, and we'll see this in the Brit, everywhere. The what? The dead in Messiah, and those who are alive will do what? They will rise. You think about this. A groom's coming to collect his people. This is fascinating. And if we're going to look at the whole marriage covenant, this is what Paul linked it to. I didn't. Well, let's just read whether this event was recorded in the Tanakh long before we ever read it in some of the, I guess in this context, the modern gospels. Your dead shall live. Their bodies shall rise. You who dwell in the dust, awake and sing for joy, for your dew is a dew of light, and the earth will give birth to the dead. Oh. Come, my people, enter into your chambers and shut your doors behind you. Oh, where did he go and build a house? Where does the groom build a house for? Oh, at the Father's house. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What are we reading? Hide yourselves for a little moment until the wrath, indignation, some of your Bibles might say, has passed by. Whoa. What sits between, what, Yom Kippur, atonement, and Yom Terah, Feast of Trumpets? They still honor it this day. They called it the 10 days of awe. To be in a place of repentance. Wait a minute. Is this just going to read exactly the way it is? We've got a groom that's come to collect his people. We've got the Tanakh saying this, and then, by the way, it's saying, hey, just stay here for a sec, because guess what? Is it a good time for the people that are not a part of that collection? No. We are not promised to be spared from a great tribulation or the time of Jacob's trouble, but we are promised to be spared, if we're in Messiah, from the time of his wrath. And we've got to get this right, because this is all getting muddled up. And all of a sudden, right? For behold, Yah is coming out of his place. Anybody who can conceive for 7 years that equals the wrath of Elohim is incomprehensibly stupid. I'm sorry. This is Elohim. And you think the world can survive 7 years of his wrath? I don't know what kind of Elohim you worship. But I'm telling you, 10 days is enough. And it is, they're apparently so scared, they're going to call upon the rocks to fall on them from the face of the Messiah who's on his way for the Day of Atonement. And he's coming with something. Oh, guess what it is? They're clothed and arrayed in garments that is going to be mentioned in Revelation. Who do you think that might be? Ooh, there might have been a bride selected. How literal could this get? To punish the inhabitants of earth for their lawlessness, their iniquity, and the earth will disclose the blood shed on it and will no more cover its slain. Look at this. Genesis 2:26. He's trying to relate all of this. Therefore, he shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife. This is what he's quoting. And they shall become one flesh. Wait a minute. We've got something where a groom is coming to gather something for the purpose of selecting something. And apparently it's going to come together as one. And somebody is going to take rule. Understanding his way, his truth, his life. Remember my statement here. I'm going to say it again. Let's just look at this. It is impossible to understand the fullness of the plan of salvation, matters of forgiveness, and Bible prophecy without a true understanding of what and who Israel is, his appointed times, and a Hebrew marriage covenant perspective. If you get these three things, if you can truly question and dig and hunger and thirst for righteousness on these three things, you will have what is concealed actually found out by those who will go after it in this thing we call the Old Testament and the Torah. What do you believe the true gospel to be? Why are you here? What I'm about to show you is been built in to ancient practices. You've seen it before. Maybe some of you haven't. Now think it through with the message today. Think this very carefully and think it through wisely, because it's going to change your walk when it hits here. If it just stays here, that's okay. You're going to chew it off a bit more. But if it drops to here, thought, spending time in thought, turns to what? Action. So as soon as something gets on the heart, you'll do it. Which is what apparently this is for. If you believe the gospel to be all about just him setting up a scene to be a savior on a white horse, when you didn't have an option to be born, you didn't decide, and you didn't decide to be born fallen, and you didn't decide you were going to die. You didn't have a say in any of this. Think about how sick a part gospel is if it's only about he came and died for your bad behavior. This is twisted because you didn't have a say in being here. Do you see what the point I'm making? Unbelievers get this and they look at the body and they're going, what are you guys doing? This is a part gospel. It is true that he died for our sin. But if I redefined sin now with all of this, whoa. Before this journey, did you really think of sin as Torahlessness? Or did you think of it as the struggles in the flesh? Let's be honest. And then when you try and self-will yourself in that, you might be successful, you might not. I know a lot of Rome that overcomes sin, if that's the definition of sin. In fact, you can go and get your modern psychology courses and everything else. But I'll tell you what, I don't know anybody in Rome who's convicted of honoring the Torah. Unless the Ruach is calling you to the house of Israel. It's very clear. So why are you here then? Think about this. He's giving you this test of life. Something has got to be give reason to why you even exist. Because you didn't decide to be here. You didn't decide to do this. I don't think he has ego problems. I think he's actually doing something. Is it just possible he's doing something that is far beyond what we could conceive? And furthermore, if you want to really understand the gospel, is it possible that it's way bigger than your imagination? Is it just possible that Elohim came up with something bigger than, you know, I don't know, you're just living your life out? I've often said, especially to my Christian brethren, well, when you believe then in the blood of Messiah, why didn't you just vanish? It's the point of your life. What's going on here? Okay. The father of the groom chooses the bride. You understand that scripturally, right? Who sent out a bride and chose from a people? We talked about this in the book of Hosea. Remember how we went through it, because we're doing this whole journey. We started with his greatest show of strength. We then, which was the segue to look into the book of Hosea. Then we walked to this under the rod, which is the one that upsets everyone. And then we get into the book of Ephesians, right? And he's going to end now with something. I'm going to show you where this goes. The father of the groom chooses the bride, and this was encapsulated. This truth was incorporated into the marriage traditions, ancient marriage traditions of the Hebrews. Why? They could have just come up with anything. Why didn't they do it? Well, I don't know. The donkey's let loose in the paddock, and wherever he stops, that chooses the... They could have come up with anything. Do you see what I'm getting at? But they're reading these ancient, and they're going, okay, that establishes this. This is step. Do you understand? Okay? The father of the bride decides the price to be paid for her. So this was built into culture. Ancient culture of the house of Israel, which, by the way, we're being called back into. They came up with this thousands of years ago. Anybody interested in why they would have done that? Do you think that they had maybe a more or less perverted of truth and understanding of this than you do today, 2,000 years in the Western world, just before the return of Yeshua, in the most silliest times you could possibly imagine, at least in thinking that the Torah still matters? The groom decides whether or not he will pay that price. It's called a dowry. He's going to decide, yes. Well, in the true gospel message, who's the groom paying the price? Did he agree to pay the price for us? Okay. Well, we find out in Hosea, was his bride a good behaved bride or was she a wayward bride? You mean there was some monkey business going on in her house? Does anybody have some monkey business spiritually that's going on in your house? Are you a wayward bride or are you a good bride? Just understand how it's all working. When you enter into this, okay, it's not like modern engagement. The moment that those proposal terms are accepted, and this is often seen with a meal, becomes legally binding if the bride accepts. And this is done over a meal. It's called a kaduba condition, and guess what she's called now? What she's considered legally under the old terms. His wife. Oh, by the way, Yeshua wasn't born a bastard, just so you know. That stuff's taught out there. Scripture clearly tells you how Mary was addressed. And Joseph took his bride-to-be? Well, wait a minute. Had he had sex with her yet? Let's not get our terms all confused in here, how this works. Betrothal becomes legally binding. The bride accepts. This is called the ketubah. They'll decide on the ketubah, which is the terms, and they'll enter into the condition. This is much stronger than what we think of as modern-day engagement. The groom then returns to his father's house to prepare a place for her. Now, I'm not saying that they understood all of this, but do you think that's a coincidence? They go the way and does this. There's something they understood and knew for some reason to this, to be a part of even their tradition. See what I'm getting at? Unless you really believe that's a coincidence. A bridal chamber. Oh, come hide yourselves for a little. Oh. Now you know why Paul maybe referred to Isaiah? Was there a bridal chamber? What did Yeshua say? I go to prepare a place for you. If this were not so, I would not tell you. But he's recording it. I'm telling you. Maybe one day there would be some silly people in the West that would be going, this is really kind of interesting. Because our modern marriage rituals do not anywhere honor any of this. It's all back to front. It's been flipped upside down. The bride then prepares her wedding garments and blankets. Wow. You mean that under this model, the bride has a job to do. She's going to willingly prepare her garments or not. Wow. You mean this isn't just about the groom and everything he's doing. He's actually including you. In fact, he's interested in see what choices you're going to make. If you were a groom looking for a true bride, is it possible that you would have a process that would find out, I got to make sure this really is my bride? Is it possible you'd be clever enough, smart enough to make it legit and real? To go, I know I love her, but whose love is in question here? Do we love him? He needs to know this, do you think? Does anybody think what's coming next, which, you know, in eternity, when we get outside the time domain, apparently we don't even, can't even conceive what this is. You don't even have the imagination to come up with it. Does anybody think it's a big deal? Does it think he's gone to great lengths to legitimize love at such a level because there's something coming which you can't even imagine that could be so important that if he got this wrong, there would be even bigger trouble than what we think we saw in the time domain. Is it possible he contained this whole sovereignty, legitimizing love issue in a safe environment and not in the outside the time domain environment? Do you think that would be a smart Elohim that if you're going to be playing around with something that's explosive, that you might do it in a safe space and not blow up the rest of the house? Oh, during this time, the bride is to have no other intimate relationships. Think about that as it's related to you. Who is here has had intimate relationships with others against your Messiah? Now that you're starting to learn what your Messiah is and what matters to him. Who here has had intimate relationships spiritually with something you shouldn't have? Sobering, isn't it? We're waking up in our journey finding out we're an adulterous bride. Now, is it potentially offensive to some to hear that? It's going to take us humbling ourselves, isn't it? It really is. This one is really going to hit our pride. Only the father of the groom decides when it's time for his son to collect his bride. Whoa, what did Yeshua say? When are you coming back, Master? Master! What did he say? What did he say to them? No one knows the day nor the, right? So he's pointing directly to a Moedim. By the way, that's Yom Terah, Feast of Trumpets. But nonetheless, who decided what appointed time that this would happen on? Ah! So if we get it, we're not in darkness, and we know who decided it, and now, in the English, it gets all a little convoluted. You know exactly what Yeshua is saying. He's basically telling them, my father's decided Yom Terah. Oh, he's the only one that knows which Yom Terah it is. I'm currently still in a fallen state. He didn't cheat, did he? You see, he's telling the truth. But he's going, oh, don't worry, this is the one that it is. I'm just not telling you which one. Do you understand? So we're not in darkness. So if we were honoring Yom Terah, is that a pretty safe place to be as we get closer and closer to the approaching of Messiah? Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh, I can't be bothered with these feasts. They're Jewish, aren't they? Thank goodness for our Jewish brethren that actually preserve them. You starting to appreciate Yehuda a bit more now? It's a big deal, isn't it? The groom, they might not know why they were doing it. They might have been taking boxes all the way, but that's not the point, right? If we come together, they see partly, we see partly. Together, we come together as one stick, one scepter to rule them all, and maybe we'll see what? Fully. Wow. Could it be this simple and this big and this exciting? The groom will usually return for her. By the way, in the tradition, it was generally very late into the night. And guess what they would do to let the bride know that he's here? The shofars were going off, and the groom would be looking for, sorry, the bride would be looking for a groom, and often it was the flicker of light at night. And she would be needing to have her garments prepared by that stage or not. And would she be needing oil in her lamp? Because what didn't they have at that time? Did they have street lamps and flashlights? So if she didn't have oil in the lamp and the groom is standing there waiting for her to join him, and it's dark, because if you know on Yom Terah, how much light is in the sky? It's as dark as you can get. No street lamps, no artificial light, anything else. You see the light on the hilltop, and how are you going to get there? See, our modern living takes away even the meaning of this event. Isn't that sad? Has anybody ever been in a really dark situation? Really dark, and you're actually stumbling around like, it's kind of freaky, isn't it? Now think about this, right? The only thing marking the Moedims and things at that point, which can also help you lead your way, as long as the skies are clear, is whatever little light you're going to get from the stars. Anyway, let that one sink in. We don't have time for that. What a shadow picture. Everyone agree? Okay. Not going to get into all that. Some very interesting stuff. We get into the whole ceremony, but we're not going to do that today. Are we preparing for a wedding his way or our way? Would you like a wife who claimed to love you but did not honor what mattered to you? Everyone, I'm going to put hands up. Is that what you want? Do you think that's what we want? I'd suggest to you that I see this. I'm not being harsh here, but I see this a lot of times in my Christian brethren. Let me show you the other side of the river. Would you like a wife who didn't love you and what mattered to you, but just obeyed anyway? Does that do it? I suggest to you, I'm seeing a lot of this on this side of the river. Would you like a wife who was only with you for what you have or can give her? Should this be a focus all about, I got to be the bride and look what I get? See, to a true bride, he's looking, what's going to become her focus? Is it going to be her and her wedding day and her garment and all of this kind of stuff? And look how I look and look at my selfies and da da da. You know what we're describing? Modern day West Bridezillas. A true bride is going to be trying to impress who? See what modern weddings are starting to look like. Who's the focus all on? The bride. The ancient Hebrew wedding ceremony, the focus is all on the groom. It's been reversed, and at the end of it, the groom lifts up the bride and says, behold, my bride has made herself. All right. Are we ready? Look at Matthew 25:10. And then we're talking about the whole virgins and the lamps, and he goes on here. And while they were going to buy, okay, so what were the ones that had no oil in their lamp told to do? Go and buy some. Oh, wait a minute. What if this is happening on a high Sabbath? Oh, hold on. Who would think that you could even be doing such a thing? People who honor the Torah or people who... I'm just suggesting. There's more than this built into this than you could possibly know. You guys do this. You go buy. You don't care about his appointed times, his ways. Whoa. Did you ever see that? Interesting. The bridegroom came and those who were ready went into the marriage feast. What's after atonement? What's the next feast? Sukkot. How long is it? 7 days. How long is the ancient Hebrew marriage covenant ceremony? 7 days. Uh-oh. Is anybody seeing a pattern? How hard is prophecy if we just start to get, do you see? We don't have to play with this, but this stuff's all being twisted. And the door was, Okay, so apparently there is people waiting for the Messiah, but they're going to have the door shut on them. That's scary, isn't it? Is it not? That's what our word is telling us. Not mine. Look at this. Hosea 2:19-20. And I will betroth you to me forever. And I will betroth you to me in righteousness. What's defining righteousness? Well, okay, whoa. And in justice, right judgment, steadfast love. Is that flaky love? No, persevering. It's there, it's strong. And in grace, favor, and in mercy. Whoa, let's not mistake what we're actually receiving here right now. We may receive grace in our life and favor in our life, but that's how he determines it when he gives it and dishes it out. Make no mistake, it's his mercy that we're experiencing right now by default because he chose to. But this whole definition of grace has even been twisted. I will betroth to you me in faithfulness and you shall know. Wow. You believe this or you don't, and you believe the wording, because it's true. Do you know what betrothal is, or the condition? We just talked about it. Do you believe that or not? Something's going on. Look at this. Revelation 19:7-8. Let us rejoice and exult and give who? Glory? Would that be the groom or the bride at this point? The glory for the marriage of the bride? The marriage of the lamb. Who's being exalted here? Who's being praised? Who's being honored? Interesting. Your modern marriage ceremony doesn't anywhere near reflect the Bible. Has come and his bride has made herself ready. You mean the book of Revelation happens to be confirming the ancient Hebrew marriage covenant traditions? That's a coincidence, right? Did they have the book of Revelation when those traditions were being established? And that understanding of how an ancient Hebrew marriage covenant works, did they know these words? No. It was granted to clothe what? Herself with fine linen, bright and pure. For the fine linen is the righteous. Righteous. What deeds would be righteous deeds? Celebrating Christmas, Halloween, Easter. Those righteous deeds? Of the set-apart ones. We're going to finish with here. It's the last scripture. I want to show you something in the Psalms. Something that I love. To finish this all off. I'm reading from Psalm 45, 6 through to, I think it's 9. Your throne, O Elohim, is forever and ever. The scepter of your kingdom, the rod of your kingdom, all of it, is a scepter of uprightness. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, Elohim, your Elohim, has anointed you with what? Oil. He's going to give this to someone. And gladness beyond your woe, beyond others in the house. Do you see what's being said here? This is fascinating. Let's keep going. Your robes are fragrant with myrrh and alloys and cassia from ivory palaces. Stringed instruments make you glad. Look at this. Daughters of kings are among your ladies of honor. At your right hand stands the queen. Do you know Revelation talks about that if you overcome in the church of Laodicea, we've read this many a times, I will grant you to sit with me on my... Where's Yeshua sitting? Look at this. In the gold of Ophir. Do you know what Ophir means? Reduced to ashes, this city in southern Arabia was one of key Solomon's trade routes for gold into that temple. And the major thing missing from the temple described in the last 8 chapters of Ezekiel, in the millennial temple, there's something missing from that temple. What is it? Gold. Do you know how he's describing the queen? This is fascinating, isn't it? What are you seeing? Because I can tell you, King David got this. What are we seeing? Do you think it's really a coincidence that the thing that's missing, that Laodicea is saying, and literally Laodicea, when he's telling you that you'll be presented here, if you overcome, I counsel you to buy gold refined in the fire. Wow. In the fire. Well, who's going to be reduced to ashes in the fire? You are. What's the outcome of it? Do you think it's a coincidence that you are seeing this in the Psalms, that they're linking to this, and then all of a sudden this major component of Solomon's temple's gold is not even accounted for in the last 8 chapters of Ezekiel, which is giving a description of a building of this thing beyond comprehension in detail? Is it possible? I'm just going to leave you with this. That not only is this great secret truly about that he's going to select a bride from his people, which is exactly the pattern that we see in ancient Hebrew. Is it possible that he considers in the rule and reign of the next age, the very presence of his bride is the gold? And even to this day, when we see our wedding rings or our adornments or whatever we're doing, just a vestige of this is snuck through even a wicked, apostate, spiritually adulterous Western environment that still somehow thinks this gold thing. Are we the gold? Will we allow ourselves to be refined and look into the brazen altar? Will we do this? Will today's message finally go from your head to your heart? Has it already? For some of you, it may never. But I know one thing. If we get it, if we get it, the word is telling us the truth. It's his dream. It's his goal. He's going to accomplish his good purpose. He will do it. And the question is, are we going to work against each other to be counted in this? Or are we going to work with each other to finish the race and to prepare our garments to something unbelievable that is coming, that was always his dream and his goal. And is it possible in our religious, spiritually adulterous environments, we were never given the full picture? Is it just a possibility? Welcome to the great secret. You have an Elohim who is preparing not just a people for eternity, but actually something that will rule and reign with him. Amen? Let's finish there. We'll do chapter 6 next week. Okay, bless you all.